KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Daly City, otherwise known as Little Manila.
Lower Haight.
Outer Richmond.
Fremont.
I'm from Israel, living in Santa Clara.
Coming up, an Oakland group is helping Black women fight the stigma associated with mental illness.
Because it's not recognized, it's been taboo. A lot of people don't like to speak about it as some sort of an embarrassment, just like cancer used to be.
Then, one woman's story on how support from her mother helped her cope with depression as a kid.
Sometimes, you know, children, they may not talk to their parents about what's going on. And I said, well, maybe she'll talk to someone else.
And how motherhood changed one Oakland musician's career.
Honestly, I think that having my daughter, I got a glow up with her.
Connecting and healing today on Cross Currents. It's the last day of National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. The month was designated by Congress back in 2008 and inspired by B.B. Moore Campbell, the best-selling African-American author and mental health advocate. Black communities are suffering from mental illness, in some cases at higher rates than the rest of the population. A recent study shows, for example, that African-American children are taking their lives at roughly twice the rate of their white counterparts. In East Oakland, residents have been living with drug wars, human trafficking, and violence for a long time. And studies show exposure to these problems can impact mental health. So what's being done about it, and who is helping? As part of our project, Hey Area, where you ask a question and our reporters find the answer, a KLW listener wanted to know what kind of volunteer work East Oakland communities are involved in. Reporter Maribet Morales visited one organization where residents are helping Black women with their mental health.
It's a sunny day in Uptown Oakland. I'm outside the doors of Black Women's Media and Wellness Project.
How's it going?
Thanks.
I'm Maribet. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for coming. Yvonne Murphy is the organization's coordinator, which is supposed to be a safe space for sisterhood and healing.
Our Black Women Media and Wellness Project has been around for 25 years. It's the longest running project of HHREC. And as you said, initially, we focused on alcoholism and its effects on Black women and their families. Around 10 years ago, we widened our scope to just encompass mental health and wellness.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness reports that African Americans are 20% more likely to experience serious mental health problems than the general population. Social issues and barriers to healthcare play a role. And African-American women with mental health challenges not only deal with constant discrimination, sexism, and racism, but also find themselves face-to-face with another problem, suffering in silence. Here's Yvonne again, shedding light on the situation.
A problem in the Black community is that of silence. What we're taught in a lot of our childhood homes growing up is to keep things within the family. And a lot of our middle-aged Black women have grown up like that, where they have been told by mothers and grandmothers to keep family business in the family.
And as I listen to Yvonne, this makes perfect sense to me. We live in a society that demands silence from us to keep moving forward. And our silence leads to mental health stigma. Ms. Lillian Freeman, a retiree and volunteer, gives me insight on the consequences of what this looks and feels like.
Mental health is a condition that needs attention. And with enough patience, people can heal, not feel isolated. Because it's not recognized, it's been taboo. A lot of people don't like to speak about it as some sort of an embarrassment, just like cancer used to be an embarrassment to mention.
Now, Ms. Freeman has been active with the organization for 6 years. She's on the community advisory board, where she meets with other members every month to discuss the Be Still retreats.
Okay, ladies, so we have a lot to fit in tonight, so we're going to go ahead and get started. We're going to start with an icebreaker and a check-in. Tonight, our icebreaker is, what is your happy place?
You want to pick one?
Yeah, I have so many places that
are happy. Yvonne says Be Still is a free one-day retreat for Black women that's held in Oakland quarterly.
The Be Still retreats usually are centered around a specific theme. So this theme will have a dynamic speaker who supports the theme, and then we'll have various self-care practitioners. And the day lasts for about 8 hours and is set up into different sections, but pretty much the CAB plans out the whole day. So they'll plan the theme, they'll plan the speaker.
Yvonne also goes on to mention that at the last Be Still retreat, there were about 130 women. The theme was Illuminating Our Spirits, in which participants of the retreat do a variety of activities ranging from workshops, meditation, and massages, just to name a few. And sitting here with the ladies today, it becomes clear to me that participating and volunteering is a life-changing experience. Ms. Lillian explains.
Well, I think I've gained an enrichment because I've met a lot of people. I've never been active in the community before, and this is very exciting for me. And I have time now that I'm retired, so I look forward to the times that we come together. I look forward to serving in the community, and anytime they call and ask me and I'm available, I'll do it.
But the experience and the work does not stop there. In addition to the retreats, the organization is also relaunching their magazine.
Yes.
Yvonne is very excited because, well, it has been 10 years since they published their last issue. So it's a pretty big deal. I mean, it's not just the fact that the magazine will be out there again, but it's also another way for African-American women in a community to volunteer and get involved.
Well, we are looking for women who self-identify as Black women.
Yvonne goes into detail about how they will collect stories in the focus groups.
And these focus groups will consist of 7 to 8 women. Hopefully they will be divided by age, but they are completely confidential.
The retreats and the magazine will help these women in their mission to normalize the conversation about mental health. Ms. Lillian offers a reason why using these resources are important for getting the word out to other generations.
There are a lot of benefits. There is a unity in the community of Black women, young and old. So the older generation, which is my generation, has a lot of wisdom, or should have a lot of wisdom. And many of us are wanting to share it. The community is separated, and that was by design. And so I think that this program, this organization, is a part of putting the community back together.
Ms. Yaya Izir, a longtime resident of East Oakland and volunteer, is doing this work to end generations of Black women staying silent about their mental health.
Don't be afraid to do something you've never done, or that your mother and your aunts and your grandmother has never done. Be the one that says, okay, I'm going to try this just in case it'll make it better for my people. And by that, I mean my family, you know, your immediate family, maybe your neighbors or something like that. Because when we take that attitude on, we're already healing.
Still, it's important to understand that healing work takes time. And at the end of the day, this is not an individual step forward. This is a collective step forward. In Oakland, I'm Maravet Morales for Cross Currents.
That story was a collaboration between Oakland Voices and KALW as part of our projects Hey Area and Sights and Sounds of East Oakland. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We just heard about a group that works to educate Black women about mental health. And that brings us to A Bay View, the segment where we ask someone to share an aspect of their life that touches on a larger issue. KALW reporter and author Janae Darden shares her personal experience with depression through poetry. Here she is, starting with her poem, Battleground.
They said Black girls from East Oakland are supposed to be tough. Daintiness is not an option. Feeling pain is not an option. They said Black women don't have time to be depressed. The early years of my mental health journey felt like a battle, not just with myself, but with others' opinions of how I should see myself. 1993, I was living my 8th grade, 13-year-old life in East Oakland. And for the most part, things were good. Back then, you would have caught me shopping at the swap meet in Durant Square, watching music videos on the local cable station Soul Beat, or reading my mother's Jackie Collins novels. And on a special day, my grandmother would call me to come over for cabbage, yams, and cornbread. I lived for her cooking. Yeah, there was a lot of violence in the community too, and luckily my family was able to keep me safe. Middle school life was a bit more challenging. I was a prissy, nerdy Black girl, a target for bullies at my predominantly Black Catholic school. Like Michelle Obama, other kids said I acted white because I earned good grades and spoke proper English. As for the taunts about my body, yeah, I had small boobs. They were like honor roll, straight A's, get it? But the attacks about my skin complexion broke me down. I've been tricked into thinking that the color pink was only restricted to the honeycomb light brown shades that are not me. It looked good on Malibu Barbie and the light-skinned girl who sat in front of my class. But when I dared to wear my favorite color, I only got teases and laughs. They said pink was too feminine for a dark-skinned girl like me. Beauty is not an option for dark girls. Colorism. Alice Walker defines it as prejudicial or preferential treatment of same-race people based solely on their color. For those of us girls with darker complexions, we face prejudices because our features are farthest from what is considered the beauty standard, white. I grew to hate what I saw in the mirror, and I prayed I had the fair complexions of Jasmine Guy from A Different World or Martin's Tisha Campbell. The girls that look like them, they always got the guy. The girls that look like me were the sidekicks. My mood slowly died. And this descent accelerated when I began high school. Adjusting was a challenge. I had a hard time making new friends, which made me hate myself more. Negative thoughts played on repeat in my head. I'm not cute. Nobody likes me. This was deeper than needing a self-esteem boost. Huh? Self-esteem? Where do you get that, I asked. Does it come in a lotion bottle or a jar, like beauty cream? Has Oprah given it away in her favorite things? Is it easy to put on, like a clip in my hair? Hold up. Does it come with Obamacare? Self-esteem, they make it sound like it's the answer, no doubt. But how is self-esteem the key in a world that constantly tries to lock Black women out? Occasionally, I have anxiety attacks on school nights. My heart would race and it felt like there wasn't enough oxygen in the room. My mom thought this was just nerves from me working hard in school. I hid my negative feelings until I couldn't anymore. My mom found a runaway note. I wanted to leave because I felt like a burden and a terrible person.
And I said, okay, there's something wrong.
She took me to a therapist with the quickness.
Yeah, it was my first idea. I knew that it was something that I couldn't handle. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, children, they may not talk to their parents about what's going on. And I said, well, maybe she'll talk to someone else.
At 14, my therapist diagnosed me with depression. I went to my appointment every week. At first, I didn't know what to expect. Would the therapist think I was out of control, helpless? I carried a lot of stigma. Aren't therapists for crazy people? I'm smart. Why can't I fix this myself? My stigma had a cultural angle, too. I thought I failed at being a strong Black woman. Black people survived slavery, and I'm better off than my ancestors. What do I have to be upset about? Even my pastor had me questioning myself. I remember him saying that people with depression need to be better Christians. These are the kind of things Black people struggling with mental health challenges hear from others and internalize. Stigma often deters people from seeking out help. But for many African Americans, quality mental health care isn't even accessible. First of all, it can be expensive. And finding a therapist who shares your culture isn't easy. About 5% of therapists in the United States are Black, while 84% are white. Inequality of care has caused some Black patients not to trust mental health providers. Black people are disproportionately misdiagnosed and over-medicated, and not getting the proper treatment can make things worse. I'm grateful I had a positive experience. My doctor was a Black woman, so she really helped me through the colorism because she understood the issue. She did not prescribe meds, But talking to her felt more like talking to a family friend. She listened to me and made me feel normal. Eventually, I learned to embrace my dark brown skin for multiple reasons. Therapy helped. And my mother bought me books and magazines with photos of gorgeous black women with hues similar to Viola Davis or Lupita Nyong'o.
Right. So you could see that, you know, dark-skinned black women are beautiful. Always have been.
This may come as a shock, but charm school had an impact. My mom sent me to a charm school run by a black woman that focused on inner self-love. Researching colorism further enlightened me on the historical roots of my pain, and writing in my journal gave me some peace of mind. Still, through the years, I battled depression and carried lots of shame. I continued to secretly go to therapy up until my 20s. But things really began to change in my 30s. Broke and unemployed, thanks to the Great Recession, journalism jobs were scarce. I took a communications job at a nonprofit in East Oakland that advocates for people with mental health challenges. This was one of the best decisions I ever made. I met people from all sorts of cultures with bipolar, schizophrenia, depression, addiction, etc. And they taught me I have nothing to be ashamed of. So when I left that job a few years later, I left with a gift, self-compassion. I'm the purple rose who blooms. At times I've grown during long droughts, alone in the darkness, but somehow come out brighter, glowing right with the rainbows. I'm the purple rose who blooms vibrantly. For the little black girls who are lied to, told their dreams are impossible, I reflect possibility. I've learned to stay afloat when the blues weigh me down, like writing poetry or having a wellness plan for when triggers come. But none of this would have been possible without the initial actions and ongoing support of my mother. For any parent listening out there, what advice do you have for them if they have a child that's struggling with depression or a mental health challenge?
Don't be judgmental. I think that's important. Don't be in denial, because oftentimes it's right in front of you, but you know, you say to yourself, oh, it's just a phase they're going through. Oh, they'll get over it. It's no, you know, no, get it evaluated.
I share my story so other people know they're not the only ones suffering. I still have my challenges and go to therapy. Some days are better than others, but I know that living with depression doesn't mean I'm weak. No matter who you are, it takes a lot of strength to deal with this thing. But that's life. It comes with beauty and thorns. I'm Janae Darden for Cross Currents, and this is my Bayview.
That was KLW's Janae Darden. Her book of poems is called When a Purple Rose Blooms. She'll be reading from it on August 8th at the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, don't say it because I know I'm cute. Ooh, baby. Louis down to my drawers, LV all on my shoes. Ooh, baby. I be dripping so much sauce, gotta be looking like bread goo. Ooh, baby. Lit up like a crystal ball, that's cool, baby, so is you. That's how I roll. If I'm shining, everybody wanna shine. Yeah, I'm gold. I was born like this, don't even gotta try. Now you know. I like shouting, they get better over time. Now you know. They just say I'm not the baddest bitch you like.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Ababa. Oakland singer-songwriter Zakiya Harris performs under the name Shapeshifter. She came to that name and her musical career when her personal and professional life fell apart. In this archive edition of Bay Area Beats, Zakiya tells us about how she came into her own.
Shapeshifting is a mantra of sorts that was really gifted to me when I went through a major transition in my life. Within a few years, I went from being married to divorce, went from being a homeowner to a victim of foreclosure, went from running a successful nonprofit that had 10 amazing staff to laying everybody off, went to having a job to not having a job. And so I realized that, you know, who do you become when all these parts of your identity are stripped away from you? Homeowner, mother, wife, etc.
Take me away for more of the same. I can't take it no more.
shapeshifting became like a guide to kind of get me through. And it really is a reminder to all of us that we need to just continue to stay in the flow, and that what might seem like a struggle at the time could be one of our greatest gifts. And I really recognize it as that now. I would describe my music as Afro-eclectic. So it's definitely got some black in it, that's the Afro, but it's eclectic, it's global, it's many different sounds. Stand true, no matter what they tell. The juxtaposition of many different types of music and sounds really is a reflection of my journey as an artist. I am a child of the South, I was born in Richmond, Virginia, so that black church element is there, but my parents raised me in Oakland, California. Like many folks from the South, kind of migrating north, and the sounds that we create there, whether it's the sounds of Motown and jazz music, and being from a place like Oakland, the Pointer Sisters, or, you know, hip hop, Too Short, Hieroglyphics, like all of those sounds shaped my notion of music. But then I also went to school back east and realized there was a whole African diaspora. People ask me all the time how I'm able to wear so many seeming hats as a mother, an artist, an entrepreneur, and really having a daughter changed my life tremendously. For me, it definitely made me super clear on what I do and what I absolutely don't do, what I'm willing to say no to. And honestly, you know, I think that having my daughter kind of, I got a glow up with her in terms of making more money, stepping into my power more, and even, you know, going through my divorce. When you know that you have to take care of somebody, failure is not an option, and you do what you need to do. And so that strength and perseverance has kind of guided me in my business and other aspects of my life. And so I say all the time, she is my greatest teacher. Shapeshifter, her name, self-love, her claim to fame, African who knows her name, which stay up in. When I gave birth to my daughter, who's now 12, and I decided I'm not going to compartmentalize who I am. I'm going to show up being myself in every room that I walk in. And so I think that when you walk in your authenticity, you actually empower others to walk in theirs as well. Black woman is God. Africa, Africa, Africa. Sometimes I talk to students in Oakland and I'm like, I'm from Oakland. And they're like, no, you're not from here. You don't look like whatever they think an Oakland girl looks like, or talk like an Oakland girl is supposed to talk like, or they think I'm from another country. I'm like, I'm from East Oakland. This is where I'm from. If young people don't see other visions, they don't know what's possible. I see my role as an artist is to disrupt the status quo. So I am here to destroy all of the things that are not serving us, and I'm here to help build and midwife this new earth and this new nation. Specifically as Black women, we play a very important role on the planet, and the images that we're putting out, whether it's Wakanda or Beychella, it's inspiring the globe. Black woman is God.
That was Zakiya Harris, aka Shapeshifter. That story was produced by Jackie Sajiko and Jen Chien. You can find more information about Zakiya and her music at kalw.org. And make sure you're subscribed to our Cross Currents newsletter, where you can get more music in your inbox every week. Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under the goddess, indivisible, but all charged for all. Abracadabra, 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 black woman is God. Abracadabra, abracadabra. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll hear about a battle over elk and cows in Point Reyes National Seashore.
Our current elk plan, which was written in 1998, does not address the presence of elk on ranches. So it doesn't give us a whole lot of guidance on what we should do.
The future of ranching in Point Reyes tomorrow at 5. This music is by Mirna from Oakland. They're performing at the Starline Social Club this Saturday night. I'm coming down, but I don't wanna talk about it. Losing my cool to some stranger's behavior, something I don't wait. So I shut my Today's Cross Currents team includes Jonathan Davis, Audrey Dilling, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, True Quinn, Eli Warchafter, and Alice Wolfley. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Deputy News Director is Angela Johnston. News Director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.